being dudes here on the Draft Dudes podcast presented by Locked On. It's Joe Marino and Kyle Krabs from the Draft Network, and we are your hosts here on this Tuesday Takes on Takes edition of the show. We're going to work through these divisional draft recaps, but we're not going to miss Takes on Takes. So by the end of next week, we'll have 8 divisional recap shows, and then, of course, 2 Takes on Takes. I'm not a math guy, but that equals 10, and it works. Kyle, good morning.
Good morning. Good morning. What's up? That's all I had. Nothing cute to come behind that. Sorry.
Really? Normally you just have something right here. We're able to banter for a second, but
no, it takes time.
Oh, I thought maybe it was the tear fest that I had pre-show with you about Dustin Colquitt being released.
Well, I knew you wanted to get on your soapbox here and talk about how Dustin Colquitt's the greatest inside the 20 punter of all time. So go ahead.
That's the whole stat. I think he's like the last like 15 years, nobody's been more consistent with inside the 20 punts. I mean, you think about a team like the Chiefs, man, you want that, right? Like those are the little things.
No, don't flush your money on a guy you're never going to use.
Yeah, but when you do use him and you want to like pin a team deep and give the ball back to Pat Mahomes, you know, you got Dustin Colquitt.
This is insane. Okay, I'm going to read you the last 10 years, okay?
Okay.
3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. The number of punts Dustin Colquitt has had in a season over the last 10 years.
Okay.
88, 89, 83, 87, 71, 75, 76, 65, 45 and 48.
The guy's got plenty of leg left in him, you know?
This man had 2 seasons before 2010 in which he punted the ball 95 or more times.
He's
out here at 36 and 37 years old punting the ball 45 and 48 times. Like I said, don't waste the money. You never use him.
You want to have a good punter for those 40 to 50 times a year you're going to punt, you know?
I guess.
You want the first one or not?
Yeah, I do. I haven't even looked at it.
From Jarrett Stidham, QB1.
No, it's incorrect. Okay.
Take, Jarrett Stidham is going to be what the Patriots wanted Jimmy G to be for them, and that's a long-term starter who takes care of the ball and lets them develop a run game.
Well, they better develop a run game with Jarrett Stidham. Will he take care of the ball? I would imagine he's smart. And he's not going to be reckless with the football. That's kind of a key variable and trait for a Belichick quarterback. Even including you look at what Jimmy G did in New England and what Jacoby Brissett did in New England. Like, they weren't really reckless ever with the ball. So I'm sure he will do that, and they will have to, by proxy, run the ball because Jarrett Stidham is their quarterback. By the way, it's Jarrett Studham. QB1 is the name because he's a big Jarrett Stidham guy.
Threw 6 interceptions in 17 at Auburn, 5 in 18.
Yeah, I mean, so like he's not going to be stupid with the ball. No. Is that a long-term starter? I would be stunned if he turns into the long-term starter.
But like, that's the thing about a quarterback like Jarrett Stidham or that type of player. It's like, cool, you don't turn over the ball, you run the football, but when you need to make throws, like dynamic throws in big spots to win a football game.
Can you do it?
Right. So you just described a backup quarterback. That can't be. The Patriots didn't always just want to have a boring backup quarterback to hand the ball off. Is this Dick Duron football here?
Might have to be this year.
Yeah, but the take that Jarrett Stidham gives us is that he's going to be what they wanted Jimmy to be for him. A long-term that's what they want?
No, I disagree with the take. But there are variables here that by necessity are going to become fact. But I don't think he'll be the long-term starter.
That could be a good trajectory, though, like Stidham, though. Like what we saw from Jimmy G this year, that could be like his ceiling. Good enough to get you the Super Bowl and lose it because you can't make a key throw.
Maybe.
Made one good.
I mean, I want to see a little more of him than that.
I know, but I was fairly high on Stidham coming out because I thought he could be this type of quarterback, but that's not a great ceiling. I don't know, man.
Slabs Anthony.
Premium Slack is lit.
If Drew Lock doesn't work out, Aaron Rodgers will finish his career as a Bronco.
The natural order of progressions, right? Like a
Hall of Fame quarterback, yeah, plays his entire career somewhere, ends his twilight in Denver, and wins another Super Bowl.
I guess what's interesting to me is the timeline here. What is Green Bay's timeline with Rodgers? What is Drew? What is the amount of time that Drew Lock has a chance to like prove himself in Denver? So do those things add up? I mean, is this a situation? Is Rodgers going to be done after this year in Green Bay? Drew Lock's not going to be the answer. They're going to know by the end of this year. And then somehow they're going to get Aaron Rodgers. Can it happen like that?
I think this is a post-2021 thing if it happens.
Yeah, I feel like I haven't heard much about the reaction or what the coaches have said about the Jordan Love pick in Green Bay or if Aaron Rodgers has commented on it. But, I mean, the timetables have to line up. I think that's the complication. But I can absolutely see John Elway doing it. That's exactly what he did with Peyton, and he won in Super Bowl. He got didn't they get to two Super Bowls and win one?
Yeah.
I'm sure he'd love to do that.
They got smashed by Seattle, and then they won the one against Carolina.
That might be one of the most forgettable Super Bowls.
The Seattle-Denver one?
Yeah, like I forgot it happened until you brought that up.
It was a painful game.
Yeah.
And wasn't it like 21, 28, nothing at halftime, and then they ran back a kickoff to start the second half or something like that. And it was just like, okay, I'm going to turn the TV off now. Like
Seattle opened up, extended their lead to, 35?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, it was 22 to nothing in the first half, and then they ran back the opening kick in the second half.
Was it Percy Harvin? Who did it? This is interesting.
Oh, Christ. Let me pull it up.
Okay. Look at this. There's a weird tangent for us to go on here and after take two.
In order to avoid a big kickoff return, Matt Prater, Curtis, shout outs to Wiki. Matt Prater kicked the second half kickoff short, hitting the ground at the Seattle 12 line, but it didn't stop Percy Harvin from picking the ball up on the bounce and taking off for an 87-yard touchdown return to increase Seattle's lead to 29 to nothing. Touchdown took place 12 seconds into the second half. Exact amount of time it took the Seahawks to score the safety in the first half.
I remember the safety.
Just total shit show. They ran that return back. I said, I'm done.
You know, you can sign Percy.
3-8 final score.
Oh, you could sign Percy Harvin right now if you want to have him on your football team.
That's true.
What are the Eagles waiting for?
I don't know, man. They got speed everywhere else.
Okay, Kyle. Oh, is this one for me? No, this one's for you.
Yeah, give it to me.
Yeah, all right. Jack, pirate boy. Miami will pick in the top 10 one time next year, and it won't be because they were one of the bottom 10 teams in the league. I was doing a pirate R, man.
So we're either going to see the Houston Texans be one of the worst 10 teams in the league, or he's suggesting Miami's going to trade up into the top 10, which they already have two first-round picks.
Yeah, could be one of those player away situations, right?
Well, I am very much here for Jalen Waddle next year.
Is that your guy?
They need some speed at wide receiver.
He'd be nice if you have Parker and Preston Williams outside.
Parker, Preston Williams, Jalen Waddle, Mike Gesicki. Let's go.
Yeah, let's not do that.
Let's do that, and then we'll use the other first round pick and draft Travis Etienne, Joe.
No.
Yeah, man, we just invested in the offensive line next year's the skill players.
Nah, dude. Nah.
Got four picks in the first two rounds next year.
Calm down.
A little excited thinking about the AFC Championship game clashes that are going to await us.
Need you to bring it down a notch. All right, chill.
All right, let's go.
No, you need to go out there and you need to get a nice nose tackle, Tyler Shevlin from LSU. You know he's got.
I honestly wouldn't hate it. I wouldn't hate it. Just not in the top 10.
And maybe
another tackle replace Jesse Davis.
No, I'm thinking maybe a safety, Ja'Cory Shepherd would be nice.
But a bad one.
Yeah, like a bad
one. Yeah, like a box safety.
Like the Austin Jackson of safeties. That's the other pick I need.
Christ. All right, we're going to move on. Rahul, out of all the quarterbacks drafted, excluding Burrow, who is expected to start week one, Jacob Eason is going into the best situation. Man, this is such Rahul.
Keep going.
we know who he is. He's a big time Colts guy. And he just wanted to find a way to twist himself into feeling good about Jacoby. Okay. Eason is going into the best situation to develop and eventually start, as whilst there is no media pressure for him to start, he also isn't expected to spend most of his rookie contract on the bench. P.S. Please agree with this take to make me feel better about the fact that the Colts will not likely draft a QB next year. Hashtag Newmanhive. Hashtag Lancehive.
Okay. First of all,
I feel a little better knowing that he has some self-awareness with this.
Yeah, he knew what he was doing. And so I don't think Chris Ballard is going to avoid a quarterback that can be dynamic and be worthy of a first-round pick because he took Jacob Eason this year. Like, I just don't think that's going to happen.
In the fourth round.
Yeah, there's nothing there that ties them together.
What do we say on this podcast, Joe?
I mean, this isn't even worth that statement.
Don't let a good prospect prevent you from drafting a great prospect.
That's if you think Jacob Eason's a good prospect, which
he's
I don't.
Nice arm. He's got a nice arm.
Sure, yeah, so did Tyree Jackson. The guy's such a slow processor. Everything was so condensed for him, and he still couldn't trigger the ball. Come on, like, no. The first part of that is no also. Jacob Eason's in the best situation to develop and eventually start. Are we going to pretend like Tua didn't just get drafted to the Miami Dolphins in a perfect situation for him? I can understand some reservations about Justin Herbert, but Jordan Love is literally on like the Patrick Mahomes plan right now. No, this is bad take by Ian.
Way to go. Way to go.
All right. That felt good. And you know what? I love our relationship with these people because I can say that and I think like everybody's good.
They know. Yeah, right. They know that like we're not being mean to you.
Right. They try to rile us up too. You know it too.
Yeah, they're eager to push the buttons in the premium slot.
And sometimes I completely ignore those takes. I'm like, nope, I'm not. They had like a Josh Allen thing in there for weeks. They've been trying to get me to do. I'm like, nope, we're not doing that.
All right, I'm gonna go find it. Hold on.
No, I think there's only 100,000 message limits, so you have to.
It's probably been bumped out since yesterday, based off the way my phone was going off.
But Rahul Laporte will give us three or four items to shift through next week, so. Keep them coming, man. Okay, Ryan Booth with a Dolphins emoji says, Najee Harris, Alabama running back, will be RB1 in the upcoming 2021 draft and was overlooked in the 2020 NFL draft process.
Well, I agree with he was overlooked in the 2020 draft process because he was a late bloomer. I don't know who lit the fire under his rear end this past year, but Najee Harris was a different beast last year.
Yeah.
He ran angry, and he finally ran to his size, where he physically challenged. Do you remember the play against South Carolina?
Yeah, that was one of my favorite. That was his best game.
Right, he had the little leak screen out to the left there.
Yeah.
And DJ Wonnum got outside the numbers, like with an angle to chase him down. And if you're not familiar with DJ Wonnum's measurables, DJ Wonnum was like, what, 265?
Yeah, right in that range.
And Harris ragdolled him. Literally tossed him aside like a small child. It was phenomenal in the open field. And then he continues to break more tackles along the way. And didn't he like hurdle somebody into the end zone to finish the play?
One of the all-time best plays of the year.
Yeah, man. Yeah. Like individual effort on that play was outstanding, but it showed his versatility as a back that you're big and strong enough to manhandle a 265-pound defensive end, and then you have the agility and the speed to get down the field and hurdle somebody into the end zone. Will he be RB1? I don't want to. I'll take the Joe Marino route and take the field at this point.
Well, the field. These are the top guys running back: Travis Etienne, Clemson; Chuba Hubbard, Oklahoma State. And then the next one is like Zamir White, Georgia; Max Borgi, Washington State.
Oh, have you seen Borgi yet?
No.
Oh, he's a trip.
He's 5'9", 195.
Yeah, he's a little scrappy white guy.
All right.
He was he made a joke when Leach left that about being able to touch the ball more.
Well, I'm interested to see him. Master Teague's up there on this list. Yeah, Najee Harris has a chance, right?
Yeah, he's got a legit chance. For sure.
There's some players we'd never heard of that are going to be great, and top picks, but Etienne and Hubbard are like the guys. This doesn't
what
look
about
like
Journey Brown. Where's Journey Brown on that list?
He's from Penn State.
Yeah.
I don't know. This is on the draftnetwork.com. 2021 database.
Journey's got all the measurables you need too. He's like 5'11", 215.
My kind of build.
Pretty electric.
Yeah.
He had 202 rushing yards in the Cotton Bowl.
Journey did?
Yeah.
These are some great first names next year. Chuba, Journey, Master, Puka.
Puka.
Puka Williams, Kansas running back. Some great names.
All right. Sports Nut. With Burns, Brown, and Gross Matos up front and Chin as a chess piece, the Panthers will have a top five defense in 2 years.
I mean, quite an influx of young talent in there. I'd like to know what the cornerback situation is. I know they drafted Troy Pride and Stanley Thomas Oliver, but right now it's those two.
Is that all they got?
That's what they got at corner.
Oh,
to go with Dante Jackson and Corn Elder. Like, that's their guys. we got to get some. And who's your best linebacker, Shaq Thompson? I love with their defensive line. I mean, you mentioned those guys, Derek Brown, KK Short, has to stick around because of his contract. Brought in Steven Weatherly. I mean, I like that a ton. And I like what they have going at safety with Chin and Trey Boston. They got Justin Burris. Like, that looks pretty good to me. But I have too many questions at linebacker and corner. Now, with that said, they can invest there, right, and make significant changes there. But, you know, a top five defense in 2 years is a lot, especially with Phil Snow. I think Phil Snow is such a wild card to me coming into the NFL. I mean, a very experienced college coach that's never coordinated in the NFL. And it's a different game. I mean, this guy's been game planning for the AAC and the Big 12 the last, you know, 6 years or whatever. Like, to me, it's a big jump. And maybe there's going to be some, like, you know, Steve Palazzolo with PFF, he made a great point. He said, it's not a copycat league. It's an innovator's league. Like, what really matters is, can you be the one that people wants to copycat? And maybe they're going to come in and do this slot safety thing with a 3-3-5 and be multiple with some 4-3 stuff. Like, it's fascinating to me, but I don't know. I get a little uncomfortable saying that in 2 years, the Panthers will have a top five defense.
Don't sleep on Jermaine Carter.
You think so? I think they obviously like him. They didn't do anything at linebacker.
Yeah.
So, and they lost Keekly. They didn't panic. They like what they had.
I remember doing Jermaine in 2018 and I really liked his tape at Maryland. So
he was pretty, he didn't play a ton, right? If I'm not mistaken,
he started at Maryland.
Yeah.
Yeah. He didn't roll up the stat sheet or anything like that, but he started 5 games last year for Carolina.
Yeah. Okay. Joey says, despite Dave Gettleman having a solid draft this year, the Giants will win only 5 games or less, and he'll be fired in the 2021 season. Fiercely
so
loyal
after,
organization.
After this year, that he's saying Gettleman will be hired. It would match with the Giants for the lack of direction and identity that they seem to be guilty of, right? You know, it was they fired Ben McAdoo after 2 seasons, and then they fired Pat Shurmur after 2 seasons, and you thought about firing Dave Gettleman, but you keep Dave Gettleman and bring in a new head coach, and then you would fire the GM after 1 bad year with a new head coach. Like, that's how bad teams stay bad, right?
Mm-hmm.
You got to get everything on the same page. So if you were committed to, okay, Dave, you and Joe are going to run the show, you can't do this unless you have no self-awareness. But like, we see this across the league. This happens routinely. And so it would not surprise me at all. If the Giants win 5 games, yes, I think Edelman's gone.
So you think this is a make or break? What do the Giants have to achieve this year for you to believe Gettleman continues?
Show progress.
Okay. Well, that's, I mean, could they show progress and win 5 games?
How many games they win last year?
Enough to earn the number 2 pick in the draft.
3.
Four, whatever they were. 3, 4.
They picked third.
So pick one. Yeah. 3 or 4 games they won?
Yeah. I think they won 4 games. Washington was 3-13.
NFC least.
Yes. Well, that's, I don't know. Like, I have a hard time spinning five games as progress versus what they did last year.
Well, they should be better. They should be. Daniel Jones will be more comfortable in year two. Defensively, like they've got some new players.
Like what they did on the offensive line to get some bullies up front.
Yeah.
Yeah, they've won three games in 2017, five games in 2018, and four games in 2019.
Really? That's the Giants over the last 3 years have won like 10 games?
Yes.
What is the actual number?
They're 12 and 36 over the last three seasons.
Did you realize it was that bad?
Yeah, I just wrote them up the other day.
12 and 36. I wrote up, did some work on the Tampa Bay Buccaneers recently. Did you know that eight of the last 10 years they were last in the NFC South?
I do now.
Over the last 10 years, Kyle.
They've
had one winning season in since 2016 is like their only winning season in like the last 10 years.
Well, it sounds like the Miami Dolphins.
Yeah.
Yeah. Here's you think about the New York Giants. How many winning seasons do you think they have in like the last 10 years?
The last 10? Well, I obviously know they have it in the last three. They had that one good year with McAdoo, like won 10 games out of nowhere.
2016, they went 11-5.
They probably had a couple before that with, I'll say three.
Okay, so 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. They've had four. They were 10-6 in 2010, 9-7 in 2011, and won the Super Bowl that year with a negative point differential. Makes sense of that shit. 9-7 in 2012. Here's their trend in the last 7 years. 7-9, 6-10, 6-10, 11-5, 3-13, 5-11, 4-12.
I guess it has not hit me that it's been this bad of a stretch for New York.
Right, right.
Wow. Well, now the world knows.
They have had a rough 7 years.
And
it was ever since that freaking boat incident.
So now you're hinging on Daniel Jones stabilizing the organization in a lot of ways, right? Because that's the best way for them to get good is by having a quarterback. And Daniel Jones is so important for that.
Right.
Wow. Fun.
I mean, this was a team, if you go the 10 years before that, they were 10-6, 8-8, 12-4, 10-6, 8-8, 11-5, 6-10, 4-12, 10-6, 12-4.
Yeah, that's the thing about Coughlin is you knew you were never going to be a fool. You know?
Yeah, the worst year under Coughlin was year one, he was 6-10, and then his last 2 years, he was 6-10. But like every other year in between was 9-7, 9-7, yeah. 10-6, 8-8, 12-4, 10-6, 8-8, 11-5.
Yeah, you're never going to be, I mean, yeah, first and last year, those are understandable, but stabilizing coach like that.
All right. This one for you. Von Tell.
Yep.
Ever since you guys started scouting, who were some of the first rounders you were sold on so much who still ended up being overwhelming and busting?
Name that pops for me is Hassan Reddick for Arizona. Yep. Came out of Temple, played all those different positions, and got such a nice look at him at the Senior Bowl playing off ball, and felt like an easy transition for him, something that was going to be natural. I mean, the work ethic and all the character stuff was checking out nicely, and he goes to Arizona, and I think part of it's not his fault because I don't think he's gotten a chance to really settle in on any one spot. They keep trying to move him around and he's not developing in any one area. So Hassan Reddick was a guy that I thought was going to be a really good player and did not work out or has not worked out yet.
Reuben Foster is another one.
Is that his fault?
No, but it's not Hassan Reddick's fault either. And that's how busts happen. Like these dudes were always talented.
Yeah.
These dudes are still talented. But, you know, between psychology and opportunity and injury and extenuating circumstances and bad decision-making off the field, like all these things mix in and like, this is how busts happen.
I'll throw another name that I think has less to do with things around him and more to do with that player. It's Taven Bryan, defensive tackle from Florida Jaguars pick number 29 in 2018. I thought he had such a high upside and ceiling based on his athleticism and some of the splashy moments he had on tape in college. And you kind of like dig into his backstory and you just kind of get this, this feeling that he's going to be like this rugged, just animal. He's not really done anything. So he's got a big year ahead of him this year. Like it's on the table for him to make or break, but you know, so far not good.
Kevin White's another one.
Injuries there.
Yeah. Injuries there. But like Kevin White was probably like my first legitimate like draft love.
Yeah.
Because I started 2014 was the first draft that I covered completely in depth. But like, you know, I got into draft coverage because I wanted a way to stay and get involved with the game and stay engaged with the game. But like I grew up like a diehard Dolphins fan. So like I did the draft coverage and like I always kind of had like one eye on like, you know, Miami still. Kevin White was the first player that said, like, forget every other like rooting interest and obligation I have. This guy is awesome. I love this dude. And the way he, remember the game against Alabama 2015 or 2014? God, he was so good in college at West Virginia.
All right.
I'm trying to think of one more pops for me. Darren Lee's probably another one.
You're running cover, right, Kyle?
Running cover, yep, but nowhere near physical enough. Totally undersold his size and that limitation for him.
All right, Mike, I guess, MIK3 says...
Mike Samuels, yeah.
All right. The Miami Dolphins now have the first, second, and fourth best quarterbacks in the AFC East.
No. Oh, no, no. I'm glad I got this one because if it came from you, they wouldn't like it. There's no way that Miami Dolphins have the first, second, and fourth best quarterbacks in the AFC. So let's look at the starters, Joe. You get Darnold, Allen, Fitzpatrick, and Brian Hoyer. Who's worst on that list?
Hoyer.
We can all agree it's Brian Hoyer. So Brian Hoyer's fourth because he's a starter. Who do you think's worse between Sam Darnold and Josh Allen?
I mean, I personally think it's Sam Darnold, but...
You can make a case for two or three for either one of those, and I know for a fact you agree with me that Ryan Fitzpatrick was the best quarterback in the AFCs last year.
Correct.
Okay. So either Fitz, Darnold, or Fitz, Allen, Darnold, Hoyer, Josh Rosen ain't getting on this list. It's called spade a spade. He does not deserve a spot on the list. Who is the best backup?
Barkley, Stidham, or Folk?
Now, if you wanted to put Tua into the conversation as the backup, I would be willing to give him the best backup role right now because he has not earned the starting job and say he's the fifth best quarterback in the AFC.
So it ain't 1, 2, and 4.
No.
We had a chance to work through this one last night.
I'm glad we had a little bit of prep time.
A little bit.
Cameron Spencer, if the Raiders plan to use Henry Ruggs as a high A-dot receiver, then Brian Edwards will see a higher target share than Ruggs this season due to Derek Carr's conservative tendencies.
Yeah, I hope they didn't draft Henry Ruggs because they feel like it's going to make Derek Carr more comfortable, you know, opening up the passing game. Because that would be disappointing. And I think pegging Ruggs as just a vertical threat is a clear lack of understanding of the full spectrum of what he can do as a football player. But to the point that Cameron made, who is he a Broncos fan? I think he might be a Broncos fan. If the Raiders plan to use Henry Ruggs as a high average depth of target receiver, use him in that regard, then Brian Edwards will see a higher target share.
They're saying
I get it from a volume perspective. The way that Carr likes to attack defenses, it makes sense. And there's a chance this could be true. But I hope that Henry Ruggs is used as a three-level threat like he deserves to be. But I see where he's going with. I think it's a pretty good take. Dennis says, this one's good. There are no sportive reasons why Christian Fulton was the 9th cornerback taken in this draft. Tennessee might have a top 3 secondary going into next season.
This is a fact. Can't support Christian Fulton, CB9.
No.
Can't make sense of it. Illogical, unless you're concerned about the disciplinary actions that were taken against him for a failed drug test at LSU. There's no way, based on the film, he's this low on the charts. It's the same thing that happened to Greedy Williams, though, last year, interestingly enough.
Yeah. And he looked like he had a decent rookie year, so.
Tennessee might have. He got me on board with the word might, because that gives me the wiggle room that it might not be a top three secondary. But they've got some really good pieces.
Yeah.
Byard, yep. Fulton. So, yeah, I'm in.
Vaccaro, Dory Jackson, Malcolm Butler. It's a good group. Yep. Yep. And they got Monty Hooker. They found a role for him.
Yep.
I like it.
The rich man's version of Geno Stone.
I want this next take, please. Oh, wait. You know what? So this is actually...
A tattle take on us.
No, it's a tattle take on himself. So the bottom is what he sent.
Thinks yes. He's right.
I respect what he did here. That's what we got to go right with this.
So he's tattle taking us for being skeptical about his take.
Yeah.
His original take was from January 20th. AJ Dillon will sneak into day two due to Derrick Henry's success this season. And his follow-up is, hey, Joe Marino and Grinding Tape, not such a bad take after all. AJ Dillon goes on day two. Hashtag takes on takes. Hashtag takes on takes revisited. Hashtag takes on takes revisited again. Hashtag 62 overall.
Hashtag CDN. I respect it, Brian. I respect what you did here. So, yeah, obviously a great take. All right. Tremendous take. But what was the Green Bay Packers doing with this pick? AJ Dillon?
No idea.
I mean, you're just going to create runways for him and ask him to be like a quick hitting, like power back. I don't know. Maybe I'm selling him short. I just did not see a guy that did anything besides run straight and be really physical and have a lot of speed for a big guy. Like the technique that goes into like pressing the line of scrimmage and helping make your blocks right and widening gaps and having timing with your plant foot as a one-cut runner. I thought all that stuff was severely underdeveloped, and he doesn't help you in the passing game. I don't know. He wasn't worth a day two pick, but the Green Bay Packers thought he was.
I did some digging here while you were talking.
All right.
Derek Carr attempted 513 pass attempts last year.
All right.
What do you think his average intended air yards per attempt were?
I'm assuming it's low. I'll go 7.5.
6.3.
No, that's bad.
It's second worst in the league amongst qualifying quarterbacks, in front of only Teddy Bridgewater. Average completed air yards per completion. What do you think that number is?
It would be lower, right?
Yes.
It would have to be like 4 or 5.
4.9. Which is fourth lowest in the NFL amongst qualifying passers, barely edging out both Pittsburgh quarterbacks, Rudolph and Hodges, who are at 4.5 yards. 4.5 average air yards per completion. Teddy Bridgewater at 4.6.
That's crazy, dude. I didn't realize how bad it was. Now, was it because the receivers were like Hunter Renfro, Tyrell Williams, and Zay Jones?
Probably didn't hurt. Here you go. Here's another one. Air yards to the sticks. So, on his pass attempts, he on average threw 2.3 air yards short of the first down marker for the entire season over 513 attempts.
I'm guessing that's pretty low down, too.
It's the third worst in the league, be in front of only Teddy Bridgewater at -3.3 and Jimmy Garoppolo at -2.5.
This is some great information.
So, yes, Derek Carr refused to push the ball down the field, refused to take shots, and you wonder why he completed 70% of his passes last year. You want to know where it gets fun? You want to know where it gets fun? He's actually in the top half of the league in time to throw as well.
Oh, no. So he's got the time.
You're holding the ball and refusing to push the ball down the field.
I think those numbers tell a story, Kyle.
They do. They do. And it's not a pretty one. Shouts to Ryan Fitzpatrick. Third quickest average release time in the NFL last year.
Yeah, he's always been getting the ball out quick.
Who is the only quarterback in the NFL last year to average more than 3 yards time to throw?
Mahomes.
No.
Josh Allen.
No.
Russ Wilson.
No.
Really? Sam Darnold.
Sam was third.
Okay, none of the others were high up there?
No, 2.92 was Sam. Big money contract. First fully guaranteed contract in NFL history for a quarterback.
Kirk Cousins.
3.01 seconds time to release.
That surprises me. I thought it'd be a guy that would be willing to move around a little bit, buy some time. Standing there, waiting, find the completion. Fitz has always had a quick trigger, man.
Fitz had the second quickest trigger in the league and was the fourth most aggressive quarterback in the NFL last year.
That's his career in a nutshell, right?
Yeah, man. It's so fun.
Fitz magic. Keep throwing at the Trey White's guy, though. Please.
Yeah, here you go. So we talked about Derek Carr had 6.3 intended air yards on average.
Yep.
Fitzpatrick had 9.
Throw those go balls, man.
Fitzpatrick had 7.1 average completed air yards versus 4.9 for Derek Carr. Fitzmagic is real. And we are done here. Takes on takes in the books. Thanks for the takes. We're back tomorrow. We're going to recap another one of the divisions for the 2020 NFL Draft, go through all the teams, talk about the players, make sure we bring you the depth so that you can feel good or bad about your class. But we will try and find the silver linings if we didn't feel good about what you did. And make no mistake, Joe, you know, we have almost all these write-ups up at thedraftnetwork.com recapping everything that happened. And there's some classes I don't feel good about, and we're going to have to dig a little bit to find the bright side, but we will. So that's what you have to look forward to coming up. See if your team made the list. Kyle Crabb, sign off. Joe Marino, thanks as always for listening to Draft Dudes Podcast.